This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You may have heard that our old friend CRISPR is back in the headlines again this week. This time, researchers from Oregon Health and Science University use this gene editing technology to fix a genetic mutation in human embryos. Now, this isn't designer babies. We're talking about using CRISPR to swap out a mutated gene inherited from one parent for a healthy gene from the other parent. But the impact of just this small change could be huge. Imagine a day where we could eliminate certain deadly or debilitating diseases from future generations by just swapping out one little piece of a gene. Of course, there are scientific challenges and regulations, and most importantly, ethical concerns to address. Before we get there, joining me now is one of the co-authors of the new study, Sukrat Metallopov, is director of the Center for Embryonic Cell and Gene Therapy at Oregon Health and Science University. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What did you and your colleagues set out to do in this study? Is this basically a proof of concept idea?
Yes. So the one of the main goals of our center is to develop and study technologies that would allow us to basically replace mutant genes in the early embryos or even in gametes. It's called germline because humans actually carry many of these kind of germline mutations that mean passed from parents. We have about 10,000 or so mutant genes that causing a variety of diseases. And the idea was we can allow some of the parents to have children without, worrying to pass this mutation. In this particular case, this was one of the types of mutations that cause disease even if there is only one copy of the mutant gene transmitted. As you know, we have in most of our genes, we have two copies. One comes from mom, one from dad. And there are some mutations when you have to have both copies mutated, then there would be no normal protein made. This case that we've been working on, this is actually one mutant copy is enough to cause disease.
Mm-hmm. And what I find, this was a heart disease, and what I find interesting about this, a lot of different things, but in particular, you tried a couple of different ways. And first you tried delivering CRISPR and the external replacement gene together into a fertilized embryo, and then got a different result with a non-fertilized embryo.
So the idea of using CRISPR or some other gene editing tools is that they mainly give you just access to gene and they induce actually damage, the cut. The good thing is you could program and tell this CRISPR which gene you're targeting and where to make a cut. But that's all they do. We need to fix the mutation, not just to make a damage additional to this gene. And that's when the cell's own SOS or repair mechanism come in place. Every cell has this DNA repair mechanism. They always survey integrity, and once they find that there is a breakage there, they immediately start the to basically gluing it together. Provide a kind of a small synthetic gene, which we call is external template, that we hope they will be used to repair this gene and hopefully remove mutation as well. And that, when we provided this to embryos and saying this is a normal gene and we would like you to use this when you repair this breakage, embryos actually refused to use this synthetic gene. But the good thing is, as I mentioned, this mutation was heterozygous, meaning the only one of the parents would provide this mutant gene, whether a second parent, in this case, maternal side, would be normal. So the embryos always chose that maternal normal gene as a blueprint to repair the damaged paternal gene. So this was quite different and unexpected. We actually tried to use this CRISPR was patient skin cells and some other cell types, which we consider as a somatic, basically body cells. And the body cells, they actually respond a little bit differently, and the DNA repair system appears to be quite different. But the embryos actually like to do this job very well. It's been known that because of the germline, which is very important for survival of species, and maintaining integrity of DNA is quite different and more stringent in the germline.
Does this mean that you don't need to provide the external repair gene for this to work?
So at least with this study, it didn't make any difference. So embryos would always refuse it. But the good thing is, as I said, we had another normal gene that seems like will take over. But we've been now thinking, as I mentioned, there are mutations or gene mutations that have to be in two copies. And there are diseases like that, say cystic fibrosis. When both parents would pass this mutant gene, that would be the both of them would be the same and mutant. So if we instruct to cut and repair both genes, then what the copy will be served as a template. And then we would have to provide a third synthetic gene, but we have to now figure out a way how to embryos to use this template to repair this both now copies.
So you haven't gotten that far yet?
No, we're still working. So this is actually the next project we're working on, and we're looking at so-called homozygous mutations and find a way now to repair, or at least help the embryos self-repair and give them right instructions to do it.
Does this suggest that adding external genes to the embryos is going to be tougher than you expected?
Yeah, at this point it seems like you'd have to do something differently if you want to insert some extra piece of DNA, and the embryo seems like refuse it.
I want to bring on another point of view about this, because news of this research has sparked many reactions from stakeholders, including the American Society of Human Genetics, which published a policy statement on human germline genome editing this week. I want to bring on one of the authors of that report, Kelly Ormond, professor of genetics at Stanford School of Medicine and faculty at the Stanford Center for Biomedical Ethics. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks so much for having me, Ira.
Do you have any fear about the results of this experiment?
It's a really exciting study and scientific development, and we actually started writing our position paper 2 years ago, I think with the fear that we need to be cautious about how this research moves forward, and all of the press about designer babies really exemplifies that. That makes people quite nervous, and we also don't know what the medical and scientific risks and benefits of these sorts of procedures are. So I think the main point of our statement was that basic science research like this at quite early stages is appropriate if it's done in a regulated manner with good oversight and transparency, but we shouldn't be leaping from this straight to having it implanted into a woman's uterus and seeing those babies born.
That's still illegal, is it not?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And no one is talking about taking that step yet, but we're just talking about to see if it might work in these early experiments.
Yeah, and I think the main issue is that not every country in the world has the same sorts of regulations or the same ability to enforce regulations. And so we really felt quite strongly with our statement, which was signed by 11 international organizations across 5 continents, that we need to get everybody around the globe talking about this so that it happens in parallel with the science that's going on, so that in 5 years we're not all of a sudden surprised by what's happening and caught off guard with no policies.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Metallopov, do you basically agree with this line of reasoning?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we actually going through a review on this paper in Nature, and several reviewers actually brought up this issue saying, well, of course, this is basic study. None of these embryos were intended, and we're not even thinking that we have a way of going to transfer these embryos. But how are you going to control this kind of unregulated IVF clinics that may just use it? The example is in parallel, we've been working on this mitochondrial gene replacement, also with the idea of replacing mutant mitochondria, which works a little bit different. Unfortunately, CRISPR doesn't work there. But studies and technologies were progressing really well in the academic institutions and in labs. But all suddenly, private clinics took it, and the children already born in very poor regulated studies or clinical trials that actually doesn't seem like these private clinics actually equipped to do clinical trials, and that was the concern. And I think many of the societies, scientific, expressing their view that yes, basic science and in vitro studies must go on, but it's too early to move to clinical applications.
I have a tweet coming in from James. It says, how do you know when you're cutting the gene that you're not removing something helpful by accident?
That's a good question. As we mentioned, the CRISPR may recognize some slightly similar sequences around the genome, and we have a pretty large genome. The only way to know it is to do very thorough screen on every embryo or biopsied cell from the embryo and look for this potential so-called off-target mutations. Mm-hmm. So far, we didn't detect anything wrong, and it looks like this particular CRISPR construct was very faithful. But you cannot say that this will be for every other target gene, because the CRISPR will be designed a little bit differently. And I guess this off-target has to be screened, and it has to be part of the PGD before we say that this is, there is no harmful unintended mutations.
Dr. Orman, you were talking about the ethical problems and of using this technique, but what about the flip side of this, the ethical problems of not using this technique, which might save thousands of lives of people who come down with a genetic disease?
Absolutely. Everybody wants to see individuals and families who are faced with genetic disease get treatments or cures, and no one who's experiencing those is going to say, gosh, I think we shouldn't be considering this at all. But I do want to be really clear, there are also many other options for doing it. And one is to use this in a somatic way on the affected cells in an individual's body, so you're not changing an embryo or changing that person's germline and what they would pass on to future generations. So those future generations would still have to be dealing with it. But you can also think about the currently available techniques of prenatal diagnosis and genetic testing, as well as IVF and PGD. So when we're really thinking about people who would use this down the line, it probably is going to be pretty rare situations, and the times when you wouldn't otherwise be able to have a biologically related child using one of those other techniques. Or, as Dr. Metalipov's group has said in their paper, people who feel uncomfortable with doing PGD and discarding embryos after that testing is performed. So those are the potential times when it might actually be useful, and that's going to be a small number of cases.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking about this new CRISPR headline this week about fixing a genetic defect in human embryos, which we should repeat, these embryos were never brought to term, were never implanted. They were just done in a dish. Correct, Doctor?
Yes. So we recovered gametes and sperm and egg, and all the fertilization done in petri dish. And we have a small window of about 4 or 5 days when these embryos can develop. It's still a small group of cells, hardly visible on the microscope. And there was, of course, never intention of using these embryos to transfer and establishing pregnancy. This was very strictly said in consent forms to donors who donated the gametes, but also our IRB regulations locally, they only allow us to do this in vitro work. Going further, for example, sometimes in the future, and if transplanting embryos into back into a patient, that where the federal regulatory agencies would regulate it. Unfortunately, at this point, we still don't have any way of going forward, just because the FDA, who is supposed to be regulating, actually they stepped forward many years ago saying this is gene therapy, even in the germline, and we would like to regulate it as gene therapy. But unfortunately, most recent restrictions to funding from a Congress to FDA would you know, wouldn't allow them even to review and work on INDs. So this is where we're kind of still unclear, because there is no clear ban on, you know, transplanting, but it seems like the FDA is not allowed to regulate. So this is a kind of very strange situation that needs to be probably resolved.
But Dr. Ormond, it doesn't, as you pointed out, it doesn't prevent other countries where these bans may not be.
Yeah, that's correct. Other countries can certainly take this up. And in England, there's a group called HEFA, which looks at this kind of research. But right now, it's really a funding issue in the United States. And our statement actually did go so far as to recommend reconsideration of that ban on funding around embryo research. We said that because we think that federal research actually undergoes a different level of oversight and regulation, and it's more transparent. And for something as controversial as this, if it's going to be happening in the United States, we really would encourage our Senate and our House to consider this and the potential importance.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Metallopov, are you going to be moving forward with the next step on this?
I think we still have a lot more to look in the basic science. As I mentioned, there are so many different mutations. So we have our work cut out, of course, to do in vitro work without ever transplanting these embryos, particularly improving efficiency. So this repair does occur with I would say, majority of the embryos, but not all. And for germline, this may not be, efficiency may not be high enough. And so we still have way to improve it. But of course, the intention is of these doing research in human embryos is it has to be for sake of future treatments. And would be happy to move forward and work with FDA, particularly because defining what's the next step and the safety efficacy studies that needs to be done. It usually, it's FDA usually regulates it. And at this point, since they're not in the play, so we really wouldn't know how to move forward.
All right. We'll be watching closely both the FDA, the USA, and other parts of the world. I want to thank Dr. Sukrat Metallopov, Director of the Center for Embryonic Cell and Gene Therapy at Oregon Health and Science University. Kelly Ormond, Professor of Genetics at Stanford School of Medicine, faculty at the Stanford Center for Biomedical Ethics. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.